This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
And horrifying news story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
Top stories of the day. Kyle Lowry delivered his final promise as a player. He said he would re-sign with the Toronto Raptors so he could retire as a member of that franchise. And today, he made it happen. One of 12 players in NBA history to play 20 seasons in the league. Can you believe that Kyle Lowry has already played 20 seasons in this league? He announced on social media that he's signing with the Raptors and will retire, ending his career with the team that he helped lead to the 2019 NBA championship and in the city that he considers home. Kyle Lowry, 20 years. Does not seem like that, but I'm getting older, Mike. Donovan Mitchell, big four-year deal with the Cleveland Cavs, signed a four-year $273 million maximum contract extension that includes a player option for the 2030-31 season and a full trade kicker. Wow. He could have waited until next summer for an additional season worth an extra $80 million, kind of like Joker's deal on his deal, but that would have been 5 years, $353 million, according to ESPN's Bobby Marks. He instead committed on a long-term extension on the first day he was eligible for a new contract to stamp his pledge to Cleveland. He was entering the last guaranteed season of his contract ahead of a 2027 player option. This now gets replaced by the new deal. Mitchell, 29 years old, says he loves Cleveland and has loved that organization ever since he got traded there from the Utah Jazz. So pretty cool there. More basketball news. New York Knicks star Jalen Brunson. He underwent surgery on his left wrist Tuesday. He's expected to return to basketball activities later this summer. He played through the left wrist injury during the Knicks championship run, sources told ESPN. So much of the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, probably the NFL playoffs too, is just surviving. Nobody's going to be healthy once they get to the end of this thing. And you saw that with the Nuggets last year when they tried to make that final push with, you know, Michael Porter Jr. still on this team. Guys are playing with bum shoulders and bum legs and bum hands. But they push through if they feel like it's within sight. And Jalen Brunson certainly is in that spot. We talked about it today or earlier, but Nikola Jokic did affirm that he is going to be re-signing with the Nuggets. He says, "My idea and desire is to stay in Denver. I'll probably sign next year. My desire is to play the rest of my life in Denver." I think what he meant is the rest of my career in Denver. The Nuggets were aware that Joker planned to address his contract situation, and they do understand Jokic's delayed timeline to be financially motivated, a team source told ESPN. Joker is under contract for two seasons. The last year is a player option. He's been eligible since June 14th to negotiate a four-year, $278 million max extension, but by waiting until 2027, Jokic is eligible to sign a five-year, $359 million deal as a free agent. I just still scares me to be a free agent. Because, Mike, he's going to, there will be the act of next year at the end of the season or in the offseason. Joker will have to decline his player option. And there will be a small window of time where he is not a Denver Nugget. Now, this is very common, especially in the NBA. They decline the player option. A day or two later, maybe even less than that, they re-sign as a free agent to that contract, as we said, a five-year, $359 million. Doesn't it make sense, though? I mean, Mike, would you rather have a four-year, $278 million max extension or a five-year, $359.5 million contract as a free agent?
Either way, I'd rather remain in Denver. If I like that and that's my home, I'd rather live there.
I think he is. I think that's his idea, too. But, Michael, he's looking at it. He even said it. He's like, it's a business. You know, I'm looking at the numbers and the dollars and cents. If I wait one more year, I get to sign a longer-term deal for even more money that probably will take him to the end of his career. This probably will be his final contract, which is hard to say, hard to believe. We're talking about Kyle Lowry playing 20 years. Joker's going to come up on his, what would this be, his third contract with the Nuggets? That contract would be the largest in NBA history and would see his career on-court earnings reach $724 million. Man, it's the second consecutive offseason in which Joker, he was eligible to sign an extension. He was eligible in the 2025 offseason to sign a three-year $200 million extension. But this is what we thought last year. I wasn't aware last year that if he waited another year, it would then kick into the five-year $359. So that one missed me last year. I thought for sure he would sign this year to pick up that extra $80 million. But now you've got an extra year on top of that, almost another $80 million. To add to the mix. So it doesn't sound like, based on the most recent direct quotes from Joker, that he is holding Josh Kroenke's feet to the fire or anything like that. Is there a chance that he's still trying to put a little fear, a little doubt? Not when you break down the financials of it. It appears to be strictly a money-slash-business-driven decision to hold off on signing. Now, the great risk with not signing, Michael, because why did Donovan Mitchell sign? He could have waited another year and got more money. You gotta really trust your body, because if you go out and you get hurt, and you get badly hurt, there's doubt. Now, I think Joker's at the point where he could break his leg. He could have a really bad ACL tear, knock on wood, and the Nuggets would still sign him to the five-year deal. But there still is a little bit of risk involved by holding off. Meanwhile, the Nuggets have been pretty quiet. They have not reached any agreement. We don't have any more news on the Peyton Watson stuff. Spencer Jones is still a restricted free agent. They did re-sign Tyus Jones, who they picked up late in the season. They picked up Marvin Bagley III. They lost Tim Hardaway Jr. So those are the big moves so far. None of them big moves, really. And the longer this goes with Peyton Watson, the more I'm starting to believe that maybe the Nuggets are going to have to settle for a sign-and-trade. And, you know, threaten whoever that team is that wants to give him $30 million, because they're not going to pay $30 million for Peyton Watson. I cannot believe that they would, but I suppose it's a possibility. But more or less, I think a team like the Clippers wants to sign him for $30 million, and Denver's going to have to threaten, no, we're going to match that to keep him, or we'll sign him and then trade him to you, but we want a first-round pick. We want to start accruing more picks. So I could see that happening. That would be a significant loss for Denver when it did seem as though Peyton Watson was going to be priority number one. But that's shifted a little bit, hasn't it? Because if you're going to bring LeBron James in for a year, if he's realistically going to come to Denver, I think it's a hard sell to tell your fan base all that. You know, you're going to be close to that second apron, doing luxury taxes, paying all that, and you got Peyton Watson and Christian Brown coming off the bench. That's what? What is Brown? $23 million? And if Watson is actually at $28 million, you're looking at, you know, $40-plus million. No, almost $50-plus million that's on the bench. That's insane to me. The thing that's fascinating with the Nuggets is they either have monster contracts or really minimal contracts. You know, they've got four guys right now that are making big time bank. You know, you've got Joker's obviously high up there. Joker's at 59, Jamal's at 50, Aaron Gordon's at 33, Cameron Johnson's at 23, and Christian Brown's at 21. So you do have all five of your starters making $20-plus million. But you, and then you look at the other contracts, and they're kind of, you know, Zeke Nnaji, as much as we want to complain, it's really not that much. It's just a lot for a guy that doesn't play. $7.4 million for a dude that never really plays. And then, you know, you have team options on Daron Holmes and Julian Strother, $3 million, $4 million. Jalen Pickett, who's going to be done. If they would have kept him, that would have been $2.4 million. They have some work to do. If they're putting all their eggs in the LeBron James basket, that is a silly move. I've heard, you know, DeMar DeRozan's name come up, that they could look at, that they would be interested in him. He was waived by the Kings. He hits free agency. He had a partial guarantee on his contract for next season, but he and Sacramento worked on his release to allow him to find a new home. Multiple contenders are expected to have interest in the guard. Eventually, if they strike out with LeBron, so if the Nuggets aren't going to be one of LeBron's teams, which is why I wish LeBron would kind of let some of these teams know what's going on, because Denver's not the team. Do they need to, again, a report I read yesterday, shared and reposted by Brendan Vogt of DNVR Nuggets, so I trust his. If he's retweeting it, there's legitimacy there that the Nuggets might be interested in DeMar DeRozan, but not if they're going to bring in LeBron James. 17 minutes after the hour. Let's talk, switch gears and talk Colorado Rockies. They lose to the Dodgers last night, but I left that game feeling even better about the future of this team. Spencer Smith, DNVR Rockies, joining us next. Keep it here on The Whole Show, powered by Mosquito Joe on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
You can hear your favorite KFKA shows anytime.
Ooh, anytime that you want me.
Find podcasts of Good Morning NoCo, Coach Speak, and The Whole Show on Apple, Spotify, or 1310KFKA.com.
Hi, this is Spencer Smith with DNVR Rockies, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA with the greatest co-host in radio history, Michael Kirkpatrick, the 439th, and Brady Hole.
Spencer, how much did Michael Kirkpatrick pay you to record that last little insult there about him being my co-host? How much did he offer you, man? Because I'll triple it.
That was a Shohei Ohtani level deal. I'm going to be getting paid until 2070.
He spent his life savings on that. And you know what he'll say? Well worth it, man.
Well worth it.
Yes, well worth it. Spencer Smith joining us, DNVR Rockies. Spencer, why do I feel like that was almost a win last night? Like, not almost a win. I felt like it was a win. Just the way this game played out, the grittiness, this feels like this is starting to become who this Rockies team maybe could be very, very soon. I get it was a loss, but man, it was a fun game to watch, and there were so many good takeaways from this one.
This team just flat out doesn't quit, Brady. They are starting to believe in themselves, and that's what's been so awesome. You saw the moment from Cole Carrick getting in Dalton Rushing's face. Like, Cole Carrick has added so much more than just being a great five-tool player on the field. I think he's given them a little bit of swagger. And then when you start winning some games like they have over the past week, I think it becomes contagious, man. And this team had the contagious gene of losing the past 4 years, where it also goes both ways. We see it in all types of sports. You feel like you've been there before and you can close out and you can win. And that's where the Rockies are, obviously still one of the worst records in the league and not where they want to be ultimately, but they're starting to feel like they can win baseball games, and the entire roster feels it.
Didn't win 37 games until like August 20th last year. So, I mean, even though, yes, they're still 37-55, the improve is, I think, beyond what a lot of people thought this team, where this team would be. You talk about Cole Kerrig. I mean, every time that dude steps up to the plate, I have quickly, my confidence level has quickly just grown into, oh, something good's going to happen. Something is going, and if it doesn't work out, I'm almost going to be shocked if he strikes out.
The guy is a firecracker. I don't know how many bats he's broken in his limited time in the MLB, but it's a high number. Every time he strikes out, last night you could actually hear it pretty clearly. I think he struck out in the fifth or sixth inning, and you could hear the shatter of the bat on the field microphone after he struck out. The guy's fiery. He wants to win. He's good at everything, and he's the perfect player to be injected into this Rockies roster right now. Unfortunately, he just plays the outfield, where a bunch of other really good players for the Rockies are right now, but he is going to start in center field and hopefully for a long time.
What was it in the altercation between he and Dalton Rushing? Because Dalton Rushing's had a few things. He's not a big Rockies guy. He's not a big fan of the Rockies. They seem to get under his skin. And Cole Kerrig got under his skin last night in extra innings. That was a moment to not just his play, but his presence, his attitude, who he is as a player for this Rockies team. I loved it. Brushing off Dalton Rushing, saying, what did he say? Like, get out of the way then, man. If you're going to complain, move out of the way. That's my favorite moment. One of maybe top three moment from last night.
Yeah, he's just a fiery dude. And Christian and I actually talked about this on the show this morning, and where this Rockies team has been, obviously last year, one of the worst years in MLB history, not just franchise history, but they were built of a team of guys that just seem to be kind of nice guys, right? And Kyle Freeland is the one guy you can kind of point to over the years that's been fiery, but it's really tough to be fiery and competitive when you have a 6+ ERA as a starter, right? You got to back that fieriness up with a little bit of good play and some consistent play out on the baseball field. And so Cole Kerrig is combining both of those, being a young, I think Warren Schaefer called him a stallion, which is kind of what he is. We were there for his debut, and the kid's just, he's kind of got that blind confidence, and that's what you want to see. And it's infiltrating the rest of the Rockies locker room, because he's not going to take any you-know-what from anybody. And I love it. It was so unfortunate that Dalton Rushing ended up getting the final hit, the walk-off hit last night, because that would have been a great ticket to a moment if he would have struck out there and the Rockies would have somehow find a way to win. But Cole Kerrig is by far the best athlete on the Rockies. There's no chinks in his armor, really. I mean, you know, theoretically, at a certain level for how many games he's played in the MLB. And he's the guy that's going to stand up to anybody, and he doesn't care. Like, he knows how good he is, and it's really good to see. The Rockies need more guys to act like that.
What did you make of in the top of the ninth when the Rockies make their run to ultimately send this to extra innings? I mean, we're very close to just having that lead before we got into the bottom of the ninth. Hunter Goodman, I mean, that they reviewed it forever. And it seemed like that maybe it was going to just say, we were going to hear it was inconclusive. There wasn't enough there to overturn it. What did you make of that play?
I was shocked they overturned it. Like I said, you know, if they would have called him out, I would have been okay with a review and keeping it the same. And they called him safe originally. I'm not sure, you know, if there's a view we just didn't get on the TV that they have in the replay center there at the MLB, or what the story was, but I am shocked that they overturned it. I'm not necessarily shocked they called him out, but the overturn of that was really shocking to me, because there was no definitive reviews that we got that showed that he was clearly out. So I thought they would stick with the call. And it's really unfortunate, because that, you know, the Rockies, they do score in the top of the 10th and obviously give up another run in the bottom of the 10th and then give up one in the 11th to lose. But that right there probably wins you the game, that call and that change of call. So pretty unfortunate in the moment, but I'm shocked that they overturned it.
I am too. I know it looked like the guys were pretty upset. Warren Schaefer looked pretty upset with it. But what more can you say about Hunter Goodman, too? I mean, he's creating such a reputation. Pitchers are terrified of this dude. But it's his leadership that I have, you know, again, he's blasting away, man. He's hitting home runs. I love it. But it's really the leadership portion of his game that's standing out to me, at least the last week or so. He is really becoming that unchallenged kind of captain of this team.
Yeah, and the greatest thing about Hunter Goodman is he's doing it a lot like Charlie Blackmon did, where, you know, sometimes, especially when the Rockies were going through this really rough period these past couple of years, and it felt like you didn't have any leadership on the team. And, you know, the team will tell you differently. If you ask any of them, they'll say, oh, well, this guy and this guy. And Hunter Goodman leads by example. But the biggest issue about leading by example is you have to be a good player to do that, right? You can't go out there and hit 220 and strike out all the time and consider yourself a lead by example guy. Anybody can talk and anybody can speak up and be a vocal leader. But when you're going to be a true leader of the team, he doesn't say much. He's a quiet kid. But he goes out there, puts his body on the line every single day, plays catcher, has one of the best ABS challenge rates. He's got the strike zone down, and then he's going to hit 50 home runs this year. I mean, the guy's been incredible and a true lead by example guy of like, hey, you don't necessarily need to look at me, but I'm going to go out there and grind every single day to be the best player I can be.
Spencer Smith joining us, DNVR Rockies. You mentioned at the start of the segment that this team is believing that they can win these games. They're not intimidated when they go up against the Dodgers, and you feel it. I mean, it's obvious. They're still having fun, but they're talking. We talked about Cole Kerrig and a little trash back and forth. They are not intimidated by anybody. They believe they could go toe to toe with anybody in this league.
Well, and that's what's great about them being such a young kind of put together team. You know, this nucleus is growing together, and then you've added in veteran, if you will call it that, pieces like a Troy Johnston and Tyler Freeman a couple of years back, and so they're this young team that kind of just doesn't really know any better is what they feel like. And once you start winning games as that team, you become extremely dangerous, and it's been fun to watch. And don't get me wrong, you know, the record is still 37-55. It's still, if I think, second worst in the major leagues as of today. They're kind of toying around with a couple of other teams for the worst record in the MLB every single week, but they are starting to believe that they can win. And you're starting to see it in real time. Last year, every game that got close down to the end, you as a fan or as anybody that watches the Rockies, you thought, okay, how are they going to lose this game? And that's not completely shifted. There's still, you know, 55 losses and probably going to lose pretty close to 100 games, if not more. But you get to the end of games, and they've scored the most runs in the eighth and ninth inning of any team in the MLB. So you get to the end of games, and it's becoming a, how are the Rockies going to make this interesting? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily win the baseball game, but how are they going to make this interesting? And I'll tell you what, win or lose, that's still fun baseball to watch for what we've dealt with the past 4 years.
I mean, Spencer, this is where we were last year. You know, we were just begging for entertaining games in July, not necessarily the wins, and the Rockies are delivering that now. And it just does feel like one of those stories that we see in sports where it's like, yeah, don't look at the record. Look at what they've done. You know, look at the growth of this team. Look at specifically these players and these hitters. Those are the things I think fans can latch on to as far as getting excited for the future, is maybe not necessarily looking at that record, but seeing the progress that's been made this year.
Yeah, the progress is very important for this team, and it doesn't always result in wins and losses, and that's a tough pill to swallow for fans. I mean, I think Rockies fans have been beaten down enough that it doesn't affect them as much anymore as it used to. But when you look at the wins and losses and you just dive into that, you're going to, you know, which is what the national media does to this team, and it's fair. They don't have time to watch all 30 teams. They just see the record and say, oh, they're the worst teams in baseball. But when you truly cover and follow this team and watch every single game, they're night and day different from last year. And we haven't, you know, the MLB draft is coming up this Saturday. The first trade deadline for the new regime is August 3rd. So they haven't really gotten their hands on this roster yet, right? This has been a testing period of, hey, what guys do we have? And they've had a lot of injuries and a lot of guys that have started games mostly on the pitching side and pitched in games that we didn't expect to even be at the major league level this year. So they've been dealing with some issues there, but we'll get to see a true test of, okay, what guys are they going to draft here coming up this weekend? And then when you look at the trade deadline, what moves are they going to make? Hopefully restock some of the pitching and restock the farm system in order to build this thing into a winner over time versus throwing money at good or bad free agents to try to come here and turn this around quicker than you would think.
Spencer, I've asked you a lot over the last weeks, like, you know, who could they potentially trade? Who are the guys that are, you know, untouchable in your mind on this team?
So the untouchable list has changed a lot for me recently, but we did our show today on if the Rockies should trade Jake McCarthy. And I think he is a piece right now that has a ton of value, and it looks like other teams are interested. So that will be an interesting piece of the non-untouchables. But the untouchables for me right now are kind of your main three younger guys on the infield, and then Cole Kerrig. So it's Cole Kerrig, it's Kyle Karros, it's TJ Rumfield, and it's Hunter Goodman. Those are the four guys that I believe will be, if we're in a wild card race, Brady, imagine this in 2028, let's say, and it's August, September, this team has got 70 wins and they're looking to go about 500 or a couple games over it. Those guys are going to be the catalysts of that team. And anybody else is expendable is tough to say, but really when you're in a situation where they're at, where the major league club has a bad overall record and the farm system is not ranked very highly and there are not a ton of guys where you're really looking forward to them getting to the major leagues, especially the pitching. You've got Charlie Condon, you've got Zach Bean, you've got Roldy Brito, who's kind of burst onto the scene this year, but he's still 19 years old. The pitching needs to be restocked and you need to have some exciting arms on the farm system to know that this team is trying to build a consistent winner.
Well, I love it, man. Like, again, watching this team, those four guys you're talking about, too, certainly could see that future is very bright, that maybe we are talking about wild card games and playoff games in the near future with this group. Spencer, my man, what are you working on for us at DNVR Rockies that we can check out throughout the week?
So we're going to be, we have another show on Thursday, 10 a.m. on YouTube, or of course you can always check out our podcast anywhere you listen to them, posted right after the show. We'll do a little bit of, we're going to have a guest on and do a little bit of draft coverage this week, kind of previewing, you know, who the Rockies may pick and why. And I think that's the really important thing about this draft is, yes, due to anti-tanking rules, the Rockies will be picking 10th, but they have three picks in the top 38, so 10, 37 and 38. And I'm not necessarily going to tell you to do a deep dive on who the player and that they drafted 10 and his stats, but I'm very curious to see the types of guys that they're going to draft. Like TJ Rumfield was a perfect example of a guy that they specifically targeted because of his metrics and his plate discipline and his ability to put the bat on the ball. And then when you go to the draft, you know, you before this new CBA comes up, you can still draft high school guys. Are they going to go high school heavy? I would assume it's the other, and they go college heavy. They get a 22, 23-year-old guys that can come into maybe double A right away and kind of not speed up the rebuild, but get guys that are more pro-ready. And so it'll be really interesting to see. So we'll cover the draft Thursday, and then next Monday we'll be covering, kind of recapping the entire draft and talking about all the guys the Rockies got. Hopefully some young promising arms are now in the system of the Rockies.
Excellent work by you as always, my man, and we'll look forward to catching up with you a week from today.
Sounds good, Brady. You have a good week, man.
You too. Spencer Smith, DNVR Rockies. The four untouchables for him, he's saying Goodman, Rumfield, Kerrig, and Karros. So I don't know, you know, at the beginning of the season, you wouldn't have said Rumfield and Cole Kerrig. You just want to see what they were up to, you know, what they were going to be. And Rumfield obviously had a great start to the season and still has his moments. Cole Kerrig is on fire right now. I that's my guy right now. That's my favorite dude. No question about it, Cole Kerrig. Watch that guy play all day. 37 minutes after the hour. More on the Sean Payton stuff, the Broncos' future. What does next season look like? There's a lot of juice around the Broncos, no question about it. And that Seth Wickersham story was 9,000 pages long. There's definitely an interest, a big interest, in what Sean Payton and Bo Nix and this close to historic defense has in store for us. Can they keep it all together? That will be the question. Let's jump out real quick and get the latest on the local sports flash.
There's only one sound like the key tumbling the lock open for the first time. One feeling like finally seeing your place after you've emptied all the moving boxes. That moment when four walls and a roof become the home you've always wanted. If you're on the search for that special place, we're the community bank that'll help you get there. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
This is Cato June, all-pro linebacker, Super Bowl champion. You're listening to 1310 KFKA.
Renaissance Insurance, they've been with this show for a while now. They also sponsor the Two-Man Game podcast with UNC head coach Steve Smiley. They were formed by two UNC Bears alumni 20-plus years ago. Renaissance Insurance has always had our backs. They specialize in risk management, commercial and personal insurance needs for Weld and Larimer County, and are also the go-to for workers' compensation and farming operations. Don't lose what you've been working so hard for. Call Ryan, good friend of mine, at Renaissance Insurance, 970-674-8825, or visit team-rig.com. First Advantage text line is 888-530-0043. In reading the Sean Payton story, I'm not going to read it all, Mike. It's too much. It's too much on one individual. I know this is your dream here. You want to read a 9,000-page novel on a Broncos head coach about a week in preparation. Yeah, I just need to skim it. I don't need the whole thing. But there was kind of a quietly documented rift between Sean Payton and Vance Joseph last year. Would you agree that maybe there was a little something there that led us to believe, okay, they need to get it right with each other? Then you read some of these comments, and Sean really laying into him about, you know, not stopping the run, 12 men on the field. And I get it. The head coach, like, it's not a competition. The head coach wins the battle. But, you know, Vance, it sounds like, had to bite his lip a little bit, because that'd be tough. It'd be tough to be like, dude, we're the reason that we're here at this point, and you won't run the ball consistently. And Sean Payton was upset about that, too, that they didn't run the ball enough against Buffalo. That's on Sean, 100%.
Yeah, I think maybe the Broncos would be better at the run if they were practicing against the run.
Yeah,
probably
yeah,
doesn't even run in practice.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know. But I just reading through this again, I think he'd be a hard dude to get along with. I think even his best friends probably have a hard time getting along with him. But do you care? If it results in winning, and you hear a bunch about these stories and how strict he is and everything, does it really matter at the end of the day? And the answer is no. It's fascinating. It's fascinating he wanted Bill Belichick to basically coach the Broncos, to take over as the coaching staff, as the head coach, to just be the head coach and get his 15 wins and then suddenly take a step back. I think that's odd. It's odd, but it's also, like I said earlier, Mike, it also shows me that this guy can share the stage. He can sit shotgun at his age with his resume. And now he's not sitting shotgun in the Davis Webb thing. And whether or not that was ownership's decision or his, it's still him succumbing to the idea that I can't do it all and be great at it all. I do need another guy that is up and coming in this league. For whatever reason, a lot of people think Davis Webb is the bee's knees. And Sean's willing to step back and say, okay, I had a hard time sometimes. getting plays in. Maybe I got lost in the excitement of Bo Nix throwing the football all over the yard and got away from the run. I need a guy that can take a different look at it. And again, that's what we're all curious to see, is how that actually works when we get into the preseason and into the regular season. If it truly is going to be Davis Webb calling the shots offensively, calling the plays. Sean's still going to be, you know, there's got to be a stat on this. I like coaches that are not the play callers, or they're the defensive play caller. Now, it didn't really work out with Vic Fangio, but I like coaches that are more or less, I got my coordinators. I hire two great coordinators because I have that talent to find those football minds that can operate the systems that I want them to operate to, and I can manage the game, because Lord knows that is a battle in and of itself. If I can hire the right coordinators to do the job, then that's what being a great head coach is. So I'm telling you, I was a fan of the Jay Norvell hire for CSU, but I got tired of that damn playbook stuck in his face when they couldn't get plays in, or they were running weird plays that didn't make sense. The timing of plays when they would do them. I think you can get lost in your own mind and your own creative genius when you're not only the one leading the development of the game plan, but you're also the one acting out the play calling duties throughout the game. I think you can get lost in that. And I think Sean Payton is case in point. I think there's a lot of coaches that get lost in that when their face is stuffed in a playbook. Obviously, there's a million coaches that prove the opposite of that point. But when this isn't working to the extent of what it could be, then I think you do take a step back, and that's when Davis Webb comes in. Because, again, the offense wasn't great last year. Bo Nix had great numbers. He threw it more than anybody in the league. This team could have been even better had they had just a little uptick in production from quarters 1 through 3. And that's hopefully the idea with this Davis Webb thing. And that's what's encouraging about reading some of this, which, again, not all this puts him in a positive light, not necessarily a negative light. But I think the biggest takeaway is that he's a guy at this stage in his career that's willing to call it what it is and take a step back.
Can you control F on this article and see how many times the word ankle is mentioned?
There's really
mentioned?
Not a ton. I mean, because it's game day after the ankle stuff was out there. So he's documenting kind of the preparation of the week ahead for the AFC Championship game, in which Bo Nix did not play. But I could try check it out for you. 49 minutes after the hour. Let's take a short break. When we come back, I'll wrap up hour number 2 of the show. We got clip of the day. More from Trey McBride. Same podcast, just more of it's leaking out about his time at CSU and some of the options that were available for him. Also, the Pac-12 news. We'll get to that. Is that a good thing or is it a nothing burger? Is it a bad thing or a nothing burger? More on that coming up next. Keep it here on The Whole Show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1, 1310 KFKA.
Baseball season, and the Colorado Rockies can be heard on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Chris Abshire, Fort Collins, Colorado, and you are listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Well, Trey McBride maybe wasn't shouting on that podcast he did over a week ago with Bussin' with the Boys, but
not literally.
He's certainly making it known that it wasn't all wonderful at Colorado State. I'm not going to read this entire Sean Payton diary, but I need to listen to that entire podcast because every day something new comes out of it. So we'll get to that. Trey McBride's thoughts on Colorado State a little bit more. Also, the Pac-12 making a bold's the right word, right? Decision. And we'll get to that in the final hour of the show. Keep it here. We'll be right back.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.